This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Bombshell tonight in the case of dead and missing U.S. scientists with top clearances across the board tonight. A nuclear lab worker dead. We find out about two shock items near her dead body in a grisly forest discovery. This as the body count, 17. Good evening. I'm Nancy Grace. This is Crime Stories. I want to thank you for being with us. Melissa Casillas. Gun found near her body. She was completely skeletonized by the time her body has been found. The family says that's not her gun. That's not our gun. Where did that gun come from?
Yeah, none of this makes any sense. There are a lot of unanswered questions, especially in Cassius's case.
We cannot locate my wife. We haven't heard from her all day. From work, it was this morning, it was the last time I saw her work. My daughter saw her around 1 o'clock. All her stuff is here in the house, but she's not here, and it's just not like her to not call work to check in and take her purse and her phone. And it looks like her phone has been, my daughter says it looks like it's been reset, but they're, you know, so, we looked all around the house, everywhere on our property. We cannot find her or nothing. And, I don't know what to do. The car that she was in is parked here at the house. The keys are here. The house was locked. Everything is here. You know what I mean? So she went from the plaza. She came home. The car was here, parked in the yard. The keys are on the kitchen table.
What's her name?
Melissa Casillas. And we called the hospital to see because, I mean, you know, if anyone, there's no one in there, you know, at all. Like that, because we thought, well, maybe if something happened to her, her purse and everything here, so no one would be able to identify her.
That is Melissa Casillas' husband's 911 call that we have just obtained. She is a nuclear lab worker that worked very closely with General McCasland, who also went missing. You know, just for context, I want you to understand who these people are, why it's so significant. Straight out to Crime Stories investigative reporter Sydney Silvani. Sydney, Melissa's body was found with two shock items, which completely torpedoes the sanitized version of how she ended up skeletonized in a densely wooded forest where she had never hiked or been before, with an unknown and unidentified weapon lying beside her. But before I get into that, I want you to explain exactly who is McCasland.
Well, Nancy, McCasland is a Air Force general, retired at this point, who worked, now that he's retired, with UAP research groups. And General McCasland disappeared in a very similar way to Melissa Casillas. His wife leaves to go run some errands. She says, "I'll see you later." They make plans to go to the gym. And when she returns home, he's gone. Change of clothes is missing, a backpack with a few items, and she has no idea where her husband is going, what he is planning on doing.
General McCasland, senior Pentagon roles, he actually oversaw nuclear research at Los Alamos National Lab. He oversaw multiple of the missing people, Jacinta Reza and Chavez. Many people believe that several of the 17 missing or dead are connected to McCasland, also missing. Now, tonight, we're talking about Melissa Casillas, nuclear lab worker, found dead in a densely wooded area, leaving behind her daughter and taking with her two very odd items. I want you to hear more of the 911 call.
And all you said, what she took was her phone?
She didn't take nothing. She didn't take her phone and everything here, and she always takes her stuff with her. My daughter was trying to track her location, and they always track each other. But her phone's wiped. The thing is, what we can't get, and she would never have wiped all the pictures off and all the information off of her phone.
Let me understand, Lauren Conlon, the connection between Melissa Casillas, an administrator at LANL, Los Alamos Nuclear Lab, and AFRL, that's the Air Force Research Lab. That's Melissa, okay, who took with her two very odd items that torpedoes the working theory as to how she died. Now, both Casillas and Chavez were at AFRL, Air Force Research Lab. Okay, now wait for it. McCaslin, General William Neal McCaslin, oversaw the funding, all the funding at AFRL. He also oversaw Monica Jacinta Risa, who also disappeared. Also, Stephen Garcia built parts for nuclear weapons connected to AFRL, Air Force Research Lab. That's how they're all connected, and the connections, they're like tentacles that go to all of these missing and dead scientists. Now they want me to believe that Melissa Casillas shot herself, what, like Amy Eskridge, like the other scientists that we find in the bottom of a lake, like Sully we find OD'd on bedwetting medications for children. No, tell me, Lauren Conlon, guys, investigative reporter, LA Magazine, star of Pop Crime TV. Also, she has been dropping investigative journalistic pieces on this story in LA Magazine. Lauren, tell me the two items Melissa Casillas took to her self-inflicted gunshot wound. What were they?
Nancy, reportedly, and this was first reported by the Crime Junkie podcast months ago, Sierra Casillas said that her mother took her thyroid medication and her toothbrush. And I am actually on Synthroid thyroid medication. And if I wanted to live my life, Nancy, and I wanted to live it comfortably, and I wanted to be healthy, I would take that with me.
Straight out to Joseph Scott Morgan, joining us, professor of forensics, Jacksonville State University. He is the author of Blood Beneath My Feet on Amazon. He's the star of hit podcast series, Body Bags with Joseph Scott Morgan. But for my purposes, he is a death investigator with over 10,000 death scenes of all sorts under his belt. Joe Scott, have you ever, ever seen a case deemed self-inflicted gunshot wound? A, we can't find the bullet. The bullet's gone. It was allegedly a gunshot wound to the head. New Mexico's had the body for over a month now. No COD, cause of death. No bullet. The family says, what is that gun? We've never seen it. That's not hers. That doesn't belong to anyone in our family. So you've got a stranger weapon, no bullet, not in her head, not around her. And now she took her thyroid medicine and a toothbrush. Yeah. I've never seen a self-inflicted gunshot wound where somebody thought to pack their toothbrush.
Yeah, it is kind of bizarre, wouldn't you think? So toothbrush, thyroid medication, and by the way, if she's off of this med, this is not a it's not a good position to be in. If you're dependent upon the Synthroid, it will increase your heart rate. If you're absent, you can have excessive sweating. It really makes you feel miserable if you're not taking it, as Lauren had mentioned just a moment ago. But let's get back to the gunshot wound. They're saying that they conducted, that the New Mexico State Medical Examiner's Office actually did a CT of the skull, and they did not find a projectile contained therein. I think my biggest question relative to a self-inflicted gunshot wound is it a through-and-through wound, which means you have an entrance and an exit. To this point, I haven't seen information about that. However, CTs are very, very sensitive. So most of the time, you will get some type of shearing off of the projectile itself, and we call it a lead storm. There would be fragmented bits that probably couldn't be seen with the unaided human eye, but they you could pick up on them on CT. So is this a through and through wound, or is it a single defect in the skull? That's one of the big questions. And if so, why are there no metal fragments in the skull?
Let me see that picture one more time of her walking along the bridge. This is the last known photo of Melissa Casillas. The final image of her alive. It's from a surveillance camera near State Road 518 in New Mexico. This is 3 miles from her home. That's something to ponder as well. Typically, in self-inflicted mortal wounds, the person doesn't go for a hike first. They are within the vicinity of their work, their home, or their hotel room. Also, look at this. John Nance joining us, former supervisory special agent with the FBI. He was assigned to Miami and D.C., as I recall, over 20 years. You can find him at townhall.com/columnist/John Nance, N-A-N-T-Z. But what I want to emphasize is supervisory special agent, FBI. And he managed to survive in Miami, which is crawling with crime. It's like roaches. And D.C., which I think I'd take Miami over D.C. with the politicians. That said, you survived. Nance, everything about this is wrong. What did she have in the backpack? Look at the picture, John Nance. Why is she going to her own self-inflicted gunshot wound with a backpack full of stuff, including thyroid medicine and her toothbrush? It's BS, Nance.
Yeah, none of this makes sense. It just doesn't add up. I mean, why would you bring equipment, you know, as presumably a backpack full of items that you would need maybe to stay out in the open over an extended period of time? The thyroid medication, the toothbrush, none of that points to self-inflicted gunshot wound. In fact, your previous guest was talking about CT scan, the bullet fragments that would most likely be present in the skull. What would be really interesting to know is the caliber of the pistol that was found near her. A small caliber weapon like a .22 would not be indicative of a self-inflicted gunshot wound. That would be highly unusual, and that would point actually more toward a homicide. If it were a larger caliber pistol, like maybe a 9mm, something of that nature, then you would expect a through-and-through gunshot wound with a larger caliber weapon like that. And the reporting regarding the state of her body is also very confusing. I saw some reporting discussing skull fragments and reconstructing her skull, but then we have evidence of a CT scan, which would indicate maybe a more complete skull or perhaps tissue still remaining inside the skull. So there are a lot of unanswered questions. What does seem to me to be very, very likely is, number one, she erased or factory reset her phones, which would indicate that she intended to leave her life behind for whatever reason. And her bringing a toothbrush, her thyroid medications indicate that she intended to continue to live. So I think that the likelihood of some sort of foul play outside of a quote-unquote self-inflicted gunshot wound is very, very high. And I've also seen reporting that is discounting her position as an administrative assistant at Los Alamos, which I think is erroneous, because I spent the first part of my career in Miami as a counterintelligence agent. And I can tell you from my experience that administrative assistants, secretaries, people in those kinds of positions are often targeted by foreign intelligence services because they do have access to classified information. And you have to also remember that people in these positions can be developed to obtain higher positions and higher accesses. So I wouldn't discount the possibility of a foreign adversary action in this particular case.
Interesting you bring that up, John Nance, former supervisory special agent, FBI. Because I noticed the last time we talked on air many people were minimizing her position. That's entirely untrue. She had access to everything that was passing through her computer, passing through her hands, every document, you name it. And you stated that very often people are, quote, developed to go higher and higher and higher within an organization. What did you mean by that?
Well, there's a recruiting process as part of an intelligence operation. Spotting, assessment, those are components of the recruiting process. And once you have an individual who is willing to participate in passing, often initially it's very innocuous information. That's how you begin to develop an individual in terms of an intelligence asset. So you can have an individual who starts off passing relatively innocuous information, and you continue to develop, meaning you could even bring in derogatory information or more commonly known as blackmail type of information to force an individual to provide classified information that they normally wouldn't. And that can go on for decades. And a person in her position could be encouraged to seek higher accesses. And that happens, you know, as a matter of course, when you're developing utilizing an intelligence asset.
You know, an issue that springs to mind, John Nance, is very often people think of spies. And you know what? Let me go to Frank Milburn on this, and I'll follow up with you, John. Frank Milburn is joining us, former British intelligence officer who knew Amy Eskridge very, very well. He does not believe her injury was self-inflicted. So now you've got Melissa Casillas, you have Amy Eskridge, you have Sully, who was this close to testifying in front of Congress on sensitive matters, and he dies of an OD on bedwetting meds for children in a hotel room far from home. Sydney and Lauren, we also have another related scientist dead at the bottom of a lake, ostensibly self-inflicted. I need to dig up his name. But Frank Milburn, in your capacity as a British intelligence officer, very often spies, I'm not saying Melissa Casillas was a spy. Was she approached to pass off information? I don't know. But very often, so-called spies are clerks, secretaries, delivery people that have access to information. It's not every spy. It's not James Bond. They're an attaché. They work in an embassy. They work in an office. They work in a lab. Explain who spies really are.
Well, yeah, I mean, in this case, I mean, if you had like an administrative assistant, you've got to think, you know, anybody who's worked in office will know, if you have a secretary, administrative assistant, they've got all the partners' diaries, you know, the principals' diaries. They know who's going to meet who when, who's having lunch with whom. All of this is absolute sort of goal to a foreign adversary intelligence officer if you're trying to do that, because these people literally have their fingers on where people are, where they work, where they're going, who they're meeting with, and also, you know, potentially what programs they're working on as well. So as John said, you know, that can be also they can be developed further. But I mean, as an administrative assistant, you're going to have your finger literally in everybody's business who's working in that particular location.
Frank, as I said, very often, as many as general public, including myself, call them spies, are lower-level administrators. They can even be delivery people, but they have access to knowledge, like Melissa Casillas. What did she have? What did she have access to? What did she know? Now, self-inflicted, there's no bullet. Her body is propped up against a tree like a Halloween prop. She's gone somewhere as if she's going on a trip with a heavy backpack. You can see it. Let's see it again. It's hanging down on her back like it's full. Full of what? I know her thyroid medicine and toothbrush. Where is she going? Why is your backpack full? This must be reminiscent to you, especially, Frank, of your friend, Amy Eskridge.
Huntsville is the Silicon Valley of government national security technology and intelligence community technology and aerospace technology. Huntsville is like the hub. Like, we are number three on the First Strike launch list. If First Strike happens, three targets, Huntsville will be one of them. Alabama. This is an Alabama dude in the deep south. We're in the top three, First Strike. I started the Institute for one reason. I started it as a public-facing persona to disclose anti-gravity technology through, because I told Mark this, if you stick your neck out in public, at least someone notices if your head gets chopped off. If you stick your neck out in private, fuck you. They will bury you. They will burn down your house while you're sleeping in your bed, and it won't even make the news. We discovered anti-gravity, and it's a real hassle. Like, we discovered anti-gravity, and it's like the worst thing that ever happened to us in our entire lives. It's like a fucking curse. It's horrible. Like, we discovered anti-gravity, and our lives went to shit, and people started sabotaging us, and it's a harassment, threat. It's awful.
Amy Eskridge, you heard her. She is not crazy. And shortly before her death, she insisted to Milburn, if I'm found dead, I did not commit suicide. Now, fast forward to Melissa Casillas. And I thought of who the individual was. It was on the tip of my tongue. It's Jason Thomas to Lauren Conlon. Isn't it Jason Thomas who was found at the bottom of a lake?
Yes, Jason Thomas was found at the bottom of a lake in Massachusetts, but he also worked for Novartis, Nancy. He didn't exactly have government ties. But Nancy, if I could add just a few things about Melissa Casillas that don't really add up with the day that she went missing. I spoke to someone who actually worked at Los Alamos, and they told me that if you, quote, forget your badge, which Melissa said she did, and keep in mind, she lived over an hour away from Los Alamos National Lab. So when she drove herself and her husband, Mark, to work that day and she forgot her badge, this employee told me, all you have to do is go to security, show your ID, and get a temporary badge for the day. But Melissa here chose to drive all the way back to Taos County? That doesn't add up.
And she said that she couldn't get in because she didn't have her badge, but she did get in. She badged herself in because the driver of the car, I've been told, has to show their badge. She was driving her husband. She comes all the way back to get her badge after she just badged in, then decided to work from home. None of it adds up. The Middlesex District Attorney's Office says the body of who they believe to be Jason Thomas now has been identified, was pulled from Lake Quanipowhat. He was ID'd based on his clothing. He, like so many others, like McCasland, like Casillas, walked away from his home and ends up dead. And isn't it true, John Nance, we keep referring to Sullivan, he died within hours of speaking to authorities about what?
Well, about testifying before Congress on the UAP subject matter. So, and that relates directly to McCasland because he was responsible for, I think, 80% of the Defense Department's SAP programs, which are special access programs, in which a lot of this UAP technology and discussion is held within these programs. So it's very, very interesting. And also, McCasland was on the short list for congressional testimony with regard to the same subject, to the UAP subject matter. So there is this strange nexus between this topic, which directly, you know, despite what you may think or believe about UAP, whether they're, you know, from another dimension or another planet, this does directly implicate government transparency issues. So it's a very serious topic, regardless of what your position is on what exactly UAP are. But this nexus with McCaslin and others is very, very disturbing, and it also implicates national security.
Well, I want to give you another fact, John, regarding Jason Thomas. He, like others, leaves behind his phone and his wallet on the bathroom counter. His wife heard him go to the mailbox that night. She heard the mailbox open and close. Guess what he put in there? His Apple Watch. Just like McCaslin. Just like Casillas. He was later caught on camera walking near a set of train tracks on North and Chestnut. Just like the others. But I want to get us back on track regarding the death of Melissa Casillas. I want you to hear something significant that the husband says in his 911 call.
And all you said she took was her phone?
She didn't take nothing. She took her phone and everything here, and she always takes her stuff with her. My daughter was trying to track her location, and they always track each other. But her phone's wiped. The thing is, what we can't get, and she would never have wiped all the pictures off and all the information off of her phone.
That's one of my biggest treasures. The thousands of pictures I have on my phone. And she wiped them all? Visited her daughter at work and took her lunch? Then takes off with a backpack, including toothbrush and thyroid medicine. But the phone was wiped, just like Thomas, just like McCaslin, and the others, leaves her phone and everything behind. Back to Joe Scott Morgan, joining us, Professor of Forensics, Jacksonville State University, and star of Body Bags with Joe Scott Morgan. I want to talk to you about how long Melissa's body has been at the medical examiner's office. It's a month, a month. We know they did a CAT scan. We know there is a, quote, fracture to the skull. Why don't we have a COD cause of death?
Well, you know, given the fact that she's in an advanced state of decomposition, sometimes they wait. And just because the medical examiner is not saying anything doesn't necessarily mean that that they don't want to. Because many times, particularly in a case like this, it's so high profile, Nancy, the authorities, the investigative authorities, as far as law enforcement goes, are still working the case, and they're doing things behind the scene that we can't fully be aware of. And so they're waiting for that data. The ME is potentially waiting for that data to come in so that they can formulate what they want to list as the COD and also the classification of the manner. All that stuff feeds into one another, and then they'll retain those remains as long as they need to. I've seen cases like this go on for a protracted period of time, and they might be bringing other people in to do consults as well, which is something that you have to keep in mind. The medical examiner for the state, which they have a state medical examiner, they don't have coroners in New Mexico, is very highly regarded. They have huge staff relative to forensic pathologists, but not just forensic pathologists. They have at their disposal forensic anthropologists that would have played a key in here. One of my real problems with this, Nancy, is a lack of recovery of this alleged round. And I want to know how well that scene was processed, because it's very standard practice nowadays. It used to be one of these things that you didn't think about. It's very standard practice now for crime scene units to all have metal detectors. How well did they process that area looking for this round that's missing, and working the area very, very thoroughly? And I don't, you know, look, it's one thing to bring crime scene investigators out there, God bless them, you know, whole nine yards. However, I would prefer to have a forensic anthropologist out on the scene, working the scene grid by grid, square meter by square meter, and covering this area to recover any kind of valuable evidence that might be out there.
Lauren Conlon joining us, investigative reporter with LA Magazine and star of Pop Crime TV. Lauren, I want to talk to you about the area, the search of the area where Melissa's body is found. And I also want to talk to you about P.O. boxes. When I was prosecuting felonies and I found out somebody had a P.O. box or multiple P.O. boxes, as well as a home address and a work address, I'm like, why? Why do they need a P.O. box? Many times it's completely innocent, but many times it's not. So take it on.
Yes, well, I'll start with the area Melissa was found in, Carson National Forest, Nancy. I just want to put it in perspective for people. This area is 1.5 million acres. I mean, I think that's like three times the state of Rhode Island. So this is not a small area. And the family had previously put out on Facebook that they had already searched it. And I'm sure they did. They were searching for her extensively. However, I spoke to the New Mexico State Police and they confirmed that their official search and rescue agency had not searched this area. Additionally, I've seen comments of people saying, you know, it's not Melissa, it can't be her. Well, the police confirmed that they did identify her body through dental records. So it is most definitely her. And additionally, what you had said about the P.O. boxes, I was investigating this the other day, and I noticed that Melissa had several attached to her name, and I couldn't figure out why. I did match one to a potential business, but it's odd. It's generally if you don't want mail sent to your home. So I don't have answers for that just yet.
What I find very curious about Melissa is, if you take these two things together, one, she leaves her house with the toothbrush, with the medication, and with a backpack, okay, which looks full from what I can see from the blurry photograph. So those are things we know that you're going to take if you want to end your existence. And then at the other end of that, we find her body, and it looks like a very, very sloppy kind of end of your life scene, how you would stage if you wanted to show that somebody had ended their own life. That would seem to be a very, very sloppy way to do it. So if you put those two things together, leaving home with all those things that you wouldn't take with you, and then the very, very sloppy scene at the end, I find I just don't understand how that came about or who would have thought that up.
Another issue that has emerged is her own daughter, Sierra, stating, all contrary to many reports, her mother did not carry a weapon. Specifically, in many accounts, described as a Glock subcompact 9mm. She did not have a weapon. She had never purchased a weapon and did not have a license for a weapon. So where is all of this false information coming from? Who's putting it out there? Back to John Nance joining us, former supervisory special agent with the FBI. Who would be putting out disinformation, trying desperately to make her death look like it's self-inflicted? Who?
Well, a disinformation campaign like that, you would ordinarily think of maybe a larger entity like a corporation or maybe even a government entity, not necessarily ours. I'm not saying it's, you know, a U.S. Government entity that would be doing that. I mean, you have foreign actors that plant misinformation in our media all the time. So that's a potential. I'm very interested when you mentioned that it's a subcompact 9mm. So to me, that would indicate that if this was a self-inflicted gunshot wound, then it would be a through and through wound. So I don't see how what we're hearing aligns with this narrative, this self-inflicted gunshot wound narrative. And also to Frank's point about the position of the body, that is, to me, that points to maybe this occurred elsewhere and the body was placed there after Casillas' death. That's what that would indicate to me.
Well, I'm going to circle back with Joe Scott regarding the 9mm possibility and what that means as to, you know, probatively, what does it prove? If it was a 9 Glock, would I find the bullet? Would I find a shell casing, for Pete's sake? That's a whole nother can of worms. Where's the shell casing? Hold that thought, Joe Scott. To Sydney Silvani joining us, investigative reporter, Crime Stories, there's also been a campaign of misinformation regarding her husband. To the point, the husband has filed a TRO. People keep putting out there, someone is putting out there that they had all these marital problems and that they had a financial situation that was about to blow up. The daughter has blasted that narrative regarding marital trouble, regarding money issues before she goes missing. And I really wonder, Sydney, if that narrative is being pushed out there to support a false claim of self-inflicted.
Right. Well, it's very, very clear that Mark Casillas had absolutely nothing to do with this. He was at work all day. He got a ride there from his wife and he got a ride home from his coworker. And Melissa was gone before any of that occurred. And he stands by the fact that their marriage was tight. It was great. They were in a good place. So all of this is just generating noise around this investigation. It's people pointing the finger at other places to distract from the discrepancies that we are seeing. It's highly improbable that Melissa Casillas packed a bag of just a toothbrush and 3 months worth of medication to turn around and take herself out of this world. It doesn't make any sense. And that's what we need to be focused on.
Lauren Conlon joining us, investigative reporter, LA Magazine, and star of Pop Crime TV. The husband has been so harassed about this, he's had to get a TRO.
Yes, he was just granted one last week, and actually the private investigator did not even show up to this virtual hearing. So it's temporary. It will last until September of 2026. And it doesn't bar the private investigator, who, by the way, is working with Melissa's parents and her nieces and another part of her family. Unfortunately, they are at odds about this, but it doesn't bar him from talking about the case. It just bars him from pointing fingers and harassing Mark online.
If you know or think you know anything, even if you consider it to be insignificant, regarding the missing and the dead, nuclear scientists and researchers, please dial toll-free 800-225-5324. 225-5324. Tonight, we remember an American hero, Corporal Scott Wheeler, Howard County PD, Maryland, just 31, leaving behind his grieving wife, now widow, Tracy. American hero, Corporal Scott Wheeler. Thank you to our guests, but especially to you for being with us tonight. Nancy Grace signing off for tonight, but I'll see you tomorrow night. And until then, good night, friend.
This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.